is area code 780. You are on the air. Who do we have?
Yes, it's Jake calling from Canada. How's it going?
Hey, we're rocking. How are you, Jake? What part of Canada?
Western Canada. We're sending you down there. I know where you live. I think you're in Arkansas or somewhere. We're sending you there cold weather right now, so just don't blame us, okay?
Thank you. We appreciate that. Well, actually, our teaching center's in Missouri, right on the Arkansas line, but we are now in Bristol, Virginia, a little further east, but it's the whole swath. So we got it. Thank you, Canada.
You're welcome.
Hey?
You're welcome.
So what's on your mind today? How can we support you? Glad to be hearing from you.
I'm a fellow Canadian. My question. Are you? Well.
Yes. Yeah, I was born and raised in Ontario.
Okay, cool. I'm in Western Canada, so awesome. I do have a question for both of you. I mean, it's interesting. I find that there's a lot of people who are dying suddenly. And just put quotes on that. And my question is that during the grieving process, I just wondered if, you know, the forgiveness is, it is a big part of it. But when people are in shock of somebody dying suddenly, when is their time, well, maybe there isn't time, to do the forgiveness thing? Or the grieving process, like, is there, there's no set time for it. But is it really important that forgiveness now is that's in the grieving process, like be part of it?
Well, I have a variety of thoughts in that regard, but I'll start out going back to a woman that I worked with. This actually goes back, about 40 years ago. I had a practice in South Florida, and there was a woman in her mid-60s who. Her father was ill, was in his 90s, and this, you know, his passing was imminent, but the word death was not allowed in the family. And we worked over a period of a couple of years, and this was an issue she worked on several times until she became courageous enough to go home and speak to mom and dad and, you know, speak about the elephant in the room. Dad is dying, and we need to deal with that. And it created a tremendous amount of upset within the family system when she did that. However, as a result of that and doing the forgiveness work and really working to be the space of love through all the trauma that came up in response to her introduction of that idea or her speaking of that idea, she heard the words from her father for the first time in her life. This is a woman in her mid-60s. She heard the words from her father for the first time in her life, "I love you." She'd never heard it before. And when and they processed through the whole family and did forgiveness work together, and the upshot of that was that when he passed, she was holding one hand on one side of his bed, her two children were holding her hands and then the other child's hand, and her mother was on the other side of the bed holding his other hand. And his passing became, she said, one of the most beautiful family experiences that she'd ever had. And she said she had a cleaner, clearer, more connected relationship with her father after he passed than when he was alive. And I could tell you several stories along those lines where people who'd done the forgiveness work went consciously to participate in someone's passing and did not experience it as a traumatic event. And my offering is that...
You're breaking up. Sorry, sir.
Oh, my apology. I'm not sure why that is.
I can't hear you.
Is that any better?
No.
Can you hear me now?
Still breaking up.
I'll tell you what. Give me one second. I'm going to change the headsets. Maybe there's something
wrong. Must be on a phone or something like that.
Give me one second. Jeannie, can you break in and tell him to hold for a second?
No.
Sure. Can you hear me okay?
Or Jake? Wi-Fi or something like that. I don't know. Sorry, I can't hear you.
Jake, can you hear me? Michael, I think it's on his end because you were clear. And he's now disconnected, so I don't know if he's got a connection issue. Maybe he'll call right back in. But I could hear you fine. And he didn't seem to be able to hear me when I was talking to him either. So I think it must have been something on his end. Hopefully he'll call right back in. We'll give him just a minute, and if he doesn't call back in, then we'll go to our second caller. But well, you may want to complete the. Oh, he did call back in. Can you hear
Sorry.
me?
Yes, we can. Thank you.
Can you hear me? Okay, good.
Yes.
Yeah, I was talking to you and you weren't hearing me either, and then you disappeared off the switchboard. So Michael's changing earphones to or headsets to see if it's any clearer, but
Oh,
anyway, he'll be
yeah.
right back with us to complete
Okay.
that.
Glad you
Okay,
called
thank
back.
you. You're welcome.
So, can you hear me now?
Yes, I can.
Oh, great. Awesome. Okay. So, what was the last thing that you could hear clearly? And I'll pick up from there in my conversation.
It was about the
I was,
person that you're talking about regarding
right.
how forgiveness worked, and oh, it was about the death thing, and
Right. So the family's gathered around the deathbed, and none of them, mother, daughter, grandchildren, experienced it as a traumatic event. And I could tell you several other stories of people who, having done forgiveness work, were able to be with the passing of a loved one and did not experience it as a painful or a traumatic event or something to grieve. Certainly, there was the desire, I wish they were here, but there wasn't the trauma and drama to work through that many people experience at the passing of a loved one. And my take, and having worked with people in that particular arena, so to speak, for the last 50 years, is that the level of trauma that someone experiences in someone's passing is a result of the unresolved issues that that individual has, one, within themselves about death in general, and two, in particular, with the issues they've got unresolved with the person who's passing. And when my experience with people, and I'll say this with myself, my mother passed about 5 years ago now, and we were extremely close. I mean, my whole life we were extremely close. And the her passing was, for me, a joyful event. She was ready. She was finished. She was 94 and she was ready to go. And it was like, so, Mom, have at it, and we hold the space for the next level of your journey. And there's actually a little symbol, something that I had made for her decades ago. Some friends of mine that I was in business with were into arts and crafts. And I made a little, fired piece of pottery for her. And I found a similar piece of pottery, and that actually, I can look at it right now, sits at the end of my bed. And it's kind of my reminder and connection with my mom, and I look at it and, on a regular basis, and it's always just, oh, hey, how you doing? Touching into her energy and experiencing her presence and her love in this present moment. So my bottom line in that would be that if I deal with everything that's in me, and of course everything's a tall order, but if I deal with the unresolved issues that I have with every individual, then whatever that individual is about, does, stays, goes, is acting crazy or acting wonderfully, I'm not traumatically impacted by that because there's no trauma in me. If there is trauma in me, then I'll be traumatically impacted by many, many different things, or I'll believe that I've been traumatically impacted by many things, but those things
Right.
aren't the cause of the trauma at all. It's what I'm holding. And then as far as, I still lament, I would still love to be able to put my arms around my mom and hug her and sit and process. I mean, she loved this work, and we would spend hours and hours and hours processing family issues and such. And I would love to do that, but as opposed to it being a situation where I miss her, that would be wonderful, and the connection I've got is awesome. without that. One of the things, like for instance, we're raising our granddaughter, she's now four. And I know that a lot of children are, and I'll use the word very selectively, brainwashed into structuring a reality in their minds about missing someone. And, you know, we've traveled a lot, so not as much as we used to, but we never say to our granddaughter, oh, did you miss me? Like, you know, as if I need to have something from her. We've never even intimated such a thing. But if people right. have a structure in their mind called, I miss you, and it involves pain and tears and trauma and loss, and then when someone isn't there, then all those things are experienced, and we project, we think it's because they're not there. But that's not
right.
why we're experiencing that. We're experiencing because it's in us. So when I apply forgiveness to those things and remove them, I remove them, and they're just not there to be experienced. And so, like, for instance, I've often gone to, like, I recently had a friend that fella used to book my workshops. He used to live at my center. He was a music director there. We were very connected for several decades. And when his wife called me and said, you know, he's sick, he's, you know, they're not expecting him. They're in hospice. He's got less than 24 hours. I got in the car and headed over there, not to lament with her, not to suffer with her, but to be the space of active love for his passing and for her healing at whatever would be going on for her as he passed. Ended up, you know, within a couple of hours of getting there, we did some hands-on work, and he was back and rocking. And 48 hours later, the hospice people came in and said, yeah, you can't stay here anymore. You're not eligible for hospice. You're not sick enough. Unfortunately, in transferring to a rehab center so he could do some rehab to go home, he contacted COVID and a couple of days later was gone. But to me, if one goes to, let's say, a funeral, we can go with our own pain and suffering and join with someone else who's in pain and suffering and redouble the pain and suffering, or we can do the work to relieve ourselves of pain and suffering and show up as human beings, as the space of conscious, active, present love that we're designed to be, and we can uplift the person in suffering. We can support them in forgiving and in letting loose of the pain and suffering of their own lives and of their generations. And I think we can uplift each other and give each other that gift. Does that make sense of where you're going with this?
Oh, yeah. Definitely. Because there was unfinished stuff with my mother, too, when she passed on. So didn't get a chance to resolve it. But I'm kind of like not over it, but I'm just still, it still comes up once in a while.
That'd be perfect topics for worksheets. That would be where you'd want to dig in, clean that stuff up. And what you'll find is that, you know, my take is, you know, my background's in physics, and based in my physics training, what I know is the only thing that exists is energy, which means we must be energy. And that energy is eternal. We must be eternal. However, if I hold some sort of unresolved energetic dynamic and the subtle energy of my mother shows up in my space, it's going to resonate whatever's in me in my quote-unquote file on mom. And instead of experiencing the purity of her being that shows up to connect with me, to communicate with me, what I'll tend to do is experience what's unresolved in me that's resonated by her presence, by the energetic presence of her being. And so as I relieve myself of those things, as I forgive those things, what I'm going to find is I'm going to have the ability to connect, to hear from her. And instead of projecting what's unresolved in me, I just get to experience the pure presence of her being. And it's an awesome gift to give yourself. It's taking a big step forward in responsibility compared to the way the world looks at things, but it makes such a difference. Is Julie Haverstick by any chance on the show today, Jeannie?
No, she's not.
No. Well, Julie is a woman who's taught our work in the school system in Dayton, Ohio, back geez, 4 decades ago. She now lives at Heartland, our teaching center. And she was there for the passing of both of her parents, and having done a huge amount of work, was just able to be with them passing. Her dad in particular, she was sitting beside the bed half asleep when he passed, and it woke her up. And what woke her up was the presence of his energy, his love, that she experienced being in her heart physically as she's sitting beside his bed. And she said the words in her mind, looking at her dad, realizing, you know, that he'd passed, or thinking that he had, and asking, "Dad, are you here?" And she got a very clear reply. And the clear reply was, "I'm here. I am in your heart." And she shares that when she shared that several times over the years on the show and at our teaching center at Heartland. And when she shares that, everybody gets it. I mean, it's like the energetic alignment she has with that truth, with that experience, touches everybody that hears it. And I think it's part of opening the space for those deeper levels of healing, and ultimately the generational healing that needs to occur when you think about some of the attitudes toward people dying, and look at, you know, what those attitudes have been in our family systems. Those attitudes, those energetic patterns, the suffering, the pain, especially when there's been a traumatic loss, you know, an accident or a sudden death, there's a lot of unresolved energetic dynamics that most people carry around in their genes, and starting to address them and work through them, I think, will change that whole process. You know, I think I oftentimes tell a story about, imagine you've got a pair of twins in the womb, in utero, and one twin leaves the womb, and to the womb mate, pun intended, the child left in the womb, it's been a death. The child's gone. Gee, my twin is gone. But on the other side, a whole world is waiting for a birth, for the entry into this world of this child. And if you look into what people call a near-death experience, which is really a near-life experience, when clinical death occurs, all of the genetic trauma, all of the lifetime trauma of an individual that's stored in what we call the body, carbon-based memory, all of that shuts off in an instant. Clinical death occurs, that's gone. And a person gets not a near-death experience, that clinically their physiology dies, but if they're fortunate enough that they're resuscitated, that they come back, that they get a brain wave again, that they get the heart going, most of those people report this wondrous, and it's consistent across languages and cultures, this entryway into a pure field of love and a pure field of light, and in many cases, welcoming from friends and family who have passed. Now, for me, it comes to a stand. A lot of people, "Oh, yeah, that's ridiculous. That's just an hallucination of the mind." Well, if you really read the research, you really look at people who've, you know, no contact with it, no knowledge, their stories are so consistent and so persistent that, it, for me, it's raised to a standard of, there's no question, when clinical death occurs, there is life. It's a birth into another dimension, and there are people there welcoming the same way as we welcome the child from the womb. We're in the womb of the universe, and there is a whole welcoming committee that's there, and life carries on. And I think that it's a sort of a self-centered cultural thing to want to stop that, to want to hold that back, to want to say, no, you can't go because of me, as opposed to, I'm here to support you, enhance your life, and give you a boost into the next dimension from this side. I think that's the possibility. And it's a near life experience. And when people come back from that near life experience, when clinical death is ended by some sort of, you know, miraculous medical intervention or what have you, and some pretty amazing medicine out there, and a person comes back, those stories are so consistent. It happens so often. There's an interesting movie out there called Saved by the Light, if you haven't seen it. A friend of ours, Daniel Brinkley, was a...
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Have you seen it?
No, I know the person, though.
Yeah. So Daniel went through, you know, clinical death, and, you know, the movie is very powerful, the way it's put together. I really acknowledge Daniel for his courage at how he allowed him to write his part accurately, and how mean and vicious a kid he was, and that basically he was a hired government killer. And when he went through that near life experience, the transformation was monumental. And, you know, he's really, I mean, Daniel, after he went through that, and one of the things he had to process was his home trauma at having killed people. And he had to go back and deal with those killings that he had done. But he sat peace-eyed, and I'm saying this for the rest of our radio audience who might not know him as you do, but, you know, he sat with hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of vets in particular. He was a military man, and he just, that became part of his mission, was just sitting with these men and acknowledging who they were and being the exit support committee for them when they were dying. And what a gift to give. There's actually a group in Hawaii that does last time I saw it, it was a free course. At one time you had to pay for it, but the last time I saw it with COVID and all, it was a free course on becoming a death doula, someone who's there to support people in making that transition. And of course, to do that, you have to deal with everything in you about death. So it's a powerful healing process.
That's amazing. Amazing wisdom.
So I breathe with you, and along the way, if you choose to step in and do worksheets in that regard, we're here 100% for questions, support, and assisting you in moving through whatever needs to be moved through for you.
Yeah, thank you very much for the opportunity. So, you know, for me myself, I actually, since my mother passed on 4 years ago, so I've been producing a grief newsletter, actually, in our local area, and send it out to people that have grief groups and various,
right.
Yeah, hospice society, and yeah, so it's been pretty, I think it's been really helpful for people on their journey, because I couldn't find any resources when I was in grief, and it was hard, so I decided just to do it. So I've been doing it for like four years.
That's awesome.
And,
what a gift to the community.
Yeah, and even I put commercial in there, and I've got death doulas and people who do spiritual work too, so it's been quite rewarding, actually.
Sweet.
I don't find it, and it's free. I don't charge anything. I just say this is what's going on, and every month I do that. I should send you a copy of it, because I said no.
Please
about
do.
That. Yeah, no, just for our local area, and I'll put my name on there. So yeah.
Well, if
I'll
you create
it right
for the local
the
area, you know, you could always just expand the local area to include the earth. If you're doing it anyway, you know,
yeah.
Who knows who
Big
you might,
project.
Who knows who you might touch, and hopefully maybe some of the forgiveness work will be, you know, integrated and offered to create support for people who don't have any idea that there are resources available. You know, you look at the community you're in, and there is not a resource, and the resource you've offered is just, I mean, that's monumental. And, so we support the effort. It's awesome.
You're welcome.
What a gift to give.
You're welcome. Thank you, Roger. That gives me, I don't know, to keep on doing what I'm doing. So, and
fabulous.
I find it's really rewarding. So I don't know who I touch, but I'm just keep on doing. I think that's what we got to do. So
well,
we just don't know until our end days of who people we touched. So, right.
You never know. Actually, the fellow that I just mentioned who I went to be at his passing, just this was like within the last year, he used to book my workshops back in the early days, 40, 50 years ago. And one of the things he used to say to people when he was talking about booking me in different places around the country is he'd say that Michael Rice, if he got the chance, would do a workshop in a phone booth. And it's true. You know, you never, as you say, you never know when the person who's going to be, you know, take it to the whole next level is in front of you. And so I'm with you 100%. Put it out there, make it available, and you never know who you're going to touch. And, you know, to me, Yeshua 2,000 years ago, the physicist, said that a little leavening leavens the whole loaf. And, of course, he wasn't talking about bread. He was talking about humanity. And that it's only going to take a critical mass, a small number, the leavening, to elevate the whole of humanity to an experience that's so far beyond where most people are stuck. You know, it's like the difference between looking down into the past and the unresolved traumas that keep calling to us and the possibility of turning our attention in a totally different direction into what's beckoning us, what's inspiring us. If we can turn, actually, the word repent, that's what it really means. It doesn't, you know, on the level where we're creators and we hold trauma, we've got 360 degree vision. You can't turn away from it. But if you process through it, you can turn your thinking in another direction. And when you do, my experience has been there's a whole, what can I say? It's like the creative power of the universe is busy building instruments to express capabilities that have never been seen on the earth. And most people are paying attention and stuck in their dramas and their traumas. Actually, one of the songs that this gentleman I was speaking about that I went to be with him in his passing, he wrote was, "Stuck in my story, my pain and my glory." And most people can't hear the inspiration that's coming from within them and the invitation to turn and embrace something else and bring it through and become a, bring in an original creation, something new to the world. And so that's what I hear you're doing with the support group that you've got. And it's awesome. I think each of us has a purpose akin to that. And if we all start, you know, repenting, turning our attention another way, not the Greek idea of, oh, repent, you sinner, you, all that crap, but just being able to turn in another direction, being able to let go of the lower energy and bring through what we're really here to do. Oh, man, I don't think we can imagine what the world would be like, what shifts and changes would occur. It would be just monumental.
Yeah.
So glad you're on the team.
You're welcome. I'm very grateful for that. I'm grateful for this wonderful wisdom you shared over the last half hour. Just like listening, because sometimes you don't think or feel that there is no other way of other thinking. But, you know, when you get a person who are like-minded and they're thinking, it offers opportunity of a different angle of looking at things instead of one way that mean not you might put yourself down and not work, but say, oh, there's another way of doing it. So basically, there's roads or forks opening up in a road where your journey is, or whether it's a grief journey or other journeys that you're on your life.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
I'm with you 200%, and the thought comes that if you would, go ahead and send Jeannie a copy of your newsletter, and her email is jeannie @whyagain.org. And what we'll do, I'll ask this of Jeannie. She does it, always does it, but we'll take this section of the radio show and separate it out and create a separate post on our website of it and send you a link so that if you want to re-listen to it or you want to share it with others, it's there to be shared.
Well, I'm very grateful for that. So Jeannie at whyagain.org.
Jeannie at whyagain, yeah. whyagain.org. Uh-huh.
Awesome. I'll send it right away after this conversation.
Sweet.
As soon
Sweet.
As I get it separated out, then I'll do a reply to your email and send you the link.
Yeah, it's Yeah, I'm really grateful for this opportunity. Like it says, it's all the various organizations where I live, where I live. So you'll find out where I live.
Sweet.
Yeah, and I don't have any preferences because I don't give any preferences to the people who are actually the groups that I'm actually promoting, because it's just by date, right? So I don't go like, well, you're this type. I don't give a level of status to them. I just say it's in
Right,
alphabetical
it's
order,
just there
or
it
I'd
is.
say it's just that, or here's the date and that's it, and this is what it is. And yeah, so I got lots of good stuff, like, yeah, from different various organizations. So yeah,
Awesome.
that's awesome.
Well, we'll look forward to receiving it. Thank you. And thank you. One of the beauties of this radio show is we get to interact with so many different people who have so many different perspectives and views and issues and questions, and each one of them opens a new space for us. So thank you for that question and the whole conversation, because it does give us the opportunity to serve on another level, and this becomes available as a resource for our community as well. So much appreciation.
Yeah, I'm grateful for both of you being part of my day that I created this morning, and grateful for
Yay.
all the warm thoughts and love that you actually give to people to help them on their journey. And both of you, and I'm grateful for three things, and I'm grateful for just being in a moment. That's all we got.
All right. Well, blessings, and have a wondrous holy day season and the best year yet of your eternal life.
Yes, have a grateful seasons of blessings to both of you and people who are on the line and people who are listening to the show later on in archive. And yeah, it's been a wonderful, grateful experience. I'll be talking to you both soon.